Our guest covers college football and hoops, part of the great 24/7 crew. You can follow along on Twitter. His handle is at Raymond Lucas Jr. Raymond, great having you back. How's life treating you on this final Friday in October?
It's going great. It's even better because you have me back on. I'm excited to talk football with you. We're in for an exciting weekend in the Pac-12, as you've hinted at throughout the show, and I'm looking forward to diving into it.
You know, as somebody who's done a sports show here for almost 30 years, I saw last night you tweeted about Damon Lillard making his Bucks debut. And, of course, you're a Weber State alum. I might be a lifelong Knicks fan, but have loved watching him his 11 years. Just, it might sound simple, but how about that guy and how fun it's going to be seeing he and Giannis do their thing in Milwaukee?
Yeah, it was interesting watching him last night because it felt so different from what we've seen throughout his career. Because, I mean, no offense to the Trailblazers, but the last couple years he hasn't had teammates that's been able to step up and make clutch shots down the stretch, especially ever since C.J. McCollum got traded. So watching him not have to carry the load and take every shot and, you know, just have players hit timely shots, and then obviously not even the best player on his team, he's playing with Giannis. Just, it's a new situation. I think it's one that basketball fans hoped that he'd eventually be in Portland. But overall, I think it's really cool to watch him be able to play on a roster of that caliber.
A couple weeks ago, you wrote about Michael Penix of Washington. It was after the Oregon game. And I've talked about him. I mean, I think he's got like a sniper calibration. He rarely misfires. Then that weird game against Arizona State. Struggled to get the ball downfield. The fourth quarter pick six saved the day. You wrote about it. Well, what did he have to say? Because it was, like I said, an odd, disappointing performance.
Yeah, it was really strange, especially coming off the Oregon loss. Like, you kind of worry about teams and how they respond to, after a rivalry game, how they respond to the next game. I think Oregon, there wasn't as much concern because they were playing Washington State, and Washington State's really capable of beating pretty much any team in the Pac-12. But Washington playing Arizona State, there's just a different vibe to that game, especially at night in Seattle. It feels like it's going to be an ugly blowout, and then it's, you know, Washington's offense was very ugly throughout the evening. And I think he basically just said that he has to play better and he has to do better. And the coaching staff, they hinted that he was feeling under the weather. And at first I thought maybe he was just masking an injury. But if he is sick, it would explain a lot. Because if you remember towards the end of that Oregon game, it seemed like he was battling core issues and he was cramping, and so maybe he's sick, battling dehydration and things like that. So you'd expect him to bounce back because, like you said, it was just very uncharacteristic. Like, it was just not what we've grown accustomed to seeing. It felt like watching Washington's offense in 2021 when Jimmy Lake was head coach. So it was a very weird thing to see. I can't make much sense of it. I'm going to assume he plays better if he's feeling better. And so we'll see how that goes when they play Stanford.
Yeah, a little bit of a difference 2 years ago to last year and this year with that offense. Talking college football, Raymond Lucas, 24/7 Sports. I want to get to that Oregon loss at Seattle. I mean, that's one of the best games of the year. The 3-4th down Dan Lanning rolls of the dice, which all crapped out, the missed field goal. What was your opinion of Bo Nix and the Ducks in defeat? Because I think what it really showed is you had two really, really good teams with one just simply somebody had to win.
Yeah, and I think that's the takeaway. Maybe if that game's in Eugene, Oregon wins that game. I think the home field advantage, it plays a little bit of a role in just which team is able to carry that momentum and ride it out. The one thing that impressed me most about Oregon that hasn't been discussed enough is obviously they played really well in the fourth quarter, and perhaps they win that game if they give Bucky Irving the ball on fourth down. I don't know if I'd punt the ball in that situation, so I agree with Dan Lanning there. I just don't know if I love the play call. But what Oregon did that was really impressive was when they were down 29-18, it felt like in the stadium that it was about to get out of hand because Michael Penix Jr., he had the ball, the offense came onto the field, and you just knew that Washington would take a couple big shots, and Oregon was able to get them off the field. They was able to weather the storm, and then they not only came back, but they came back and took the lead and held on to it until a little bit over a minute remaining in the fourth quarter. So I'd feel encouraged if I'm both teams, and I think everyone is rooting for a rematch in Las Vegas. But Oregon, they really impressed me with how they were able to, you know, block out the outside noise, because Husky Stadium, it got rocking in that moment. It was like nothing but energy. And then Oregon was like, okay, let's settle down. We're not going to let this thing get out of hand. We're going to get comfortable. And Bo Nix was great. Bucky Irving was great. Troy Franklin was so good that I thought he won the game on that catch in the fourth quarter, which for some reason was ruled incomplete originally. And obviously they got the call right after, but that's a talented team. And I think the winner of Washington and Oregon in that regular season game, regardless, was going to have to beat the other team twice. And so we'll see if it happens again in Las Vegas if we get that matchup.
I want to get to another game, because after that game, a lot of people just went about their business, then saw, what? Arizona beat the Cougars 44-6? Just a very surprising result. And now they host Oregon State. Beavs, with just one loss at Washington State, still control their fate to get to Vegas. But what about this game? I'm looking at it as it might not pop to everybody nationally, but this looks like it's going to be one of the weekend's best games.
Yeah, this one is dangerous. It's Pac-12 after dark, of course.
Right.
At Arizona, it has that feeling of some chaos is about to happen. And Oregon State, they don't have the high-profile name that other teams in the Pac-12 have been able to compile over the years. But Oregon is the number 11-ranked team, and this one has upset written all over it. I don't know if it happens, but I wouldn't be stunned, and I don't think anyone would be, because Arizona, I think they beat USC if they go for it. In the first overtime, if they go for two, but they didn't. I don't know why. They scored on the first play of overtime in that game, but they chose to kick the field goal rather than go for two. I'm always on the positioning that you should go for two when you have a chance to upset a team, especially when your offense is hot and a defense can't get a stop. We've seen that with Colorado a couple times this season. Colorado State didn't do it. Arizona State, I believe it was, didn't do it. And so I don't know what's going on with decision-making with going for two in overtime, but Arizona certainly should have done it. They played Washington really well. I think that's been the most surprising thing to me, is how well Arizona's defense has played, because we knew the offense would be good, and we knew that their passing game would take another step, but their defense has been really, really good, and that's what makes this game with Oregon State interesting, because both of these teams are capable of winning ugly. And when two teams can win ugly, I tend to lean with the home team, especially with the environment that they'll have. And like I said, Pac-12 after dark, we know just how crazy it can get.
Yep, down at the Zona Zoo. Talking with Raymond Lucas, 24/7 Sports. Let's get outside the conference. Alabama interests me. It seems like after they lost at home to Texas, far too many people just dismissed them. But now, you know, they've gotten enough from Jalen Milroe and the offense. They beat Texas A&M and on the road. They scored the final 27 points last week to beat Tennessee. For those who aren't aware, Caleb Downs might be the best freshman in the country. Then they have LSU next week. Then it seems like kind of a clear path. Ray, would it be fair to say, don't forget the Tide just yet?
Definitely. I agree with that 100%. And I think where Alabama has changed in recent years is that we're so used to Alabama starting the season and they're already basically playing at their peak and they're just hammering teams, and they might get in a close game, but really every game is a blowout. But it's not the same dominant Alabama program, and that's okay. That's a high standard to live up to. That's to be able to reach that and continue that. It was impressive that Nick Saban was able to do it as long as he could. But now it's like when Alabama loses a game, everybody freaks out and says, oh, you know, Nick Saban, it's over. They're not going to win another championship. And ever since that Texas loss, and I'd say after the USF game, Alabama's really looked like they figured things out. And I think the USF game, even though they struggled in it, was really important because Jalen Milroe didn't play a snap. And it was clear that Alabama's offense was drastically worse without him. And So I think that gave the coaching staff the confidence that, okay, we're going to go with Jalen Milroe. I think, even though he won't ever say it, I think it gave Jalen Milroe confidence that, okay, I'm the guy at quarterback, because these other guys, they're not quite ready to step in and perform. And he's really gotten better as time's progressed. The defense is great, and it's really tough to stop dual threat quarterbacks, and I think that's what makes Alabama so scary. And Milroe, he throws the ball deep really well. It's the intermediate passes that have some work to do, but he's still young. But his deep ball is really accurate, especially when he's hot and he's like really feeling it. And so I think this is a team that is capable of winning the SEC. I think they can get to the college football playoff. And if you get there, there's no telling who's going to win it, because there's not a dominant team this season. Like, there's, even though Georgia has won two straight national championships, you can't fully convince me that Georgia's going to go and blow out Florida when they play tomorrow, just because Georgia's been, you know, it's kind of, we just have to see, especially without Brock Bowers. And so you win the SEC, you give yourself a great shot at winning a national championship, and I think Alabama is plenty capable. And I think it sets up an interesting scenario, because Nick Saban, you don't know how many more national championships you're going to win if you're him. If you win that, do you retire and go out on top? Because that's the best way to go out, in my opinion. You win, you're out, especially in a season where everybody's doubting you. And so, I mean, we'll see how it goes, but I think Alabama fans should be really confident. LSU will be a huge test, because obviously you lose two games, making the college football playoff is very hard. But if they can handle LSU's offense and outscore LSU's offense, then I think that tells us all we need to know about Alabama. I think we'll see them in the SEC championship game, and I think we'll see them in the college football playoff if they beat LSU.
Yep, another black game always comes down to having a lot of value. I want to get to the Big Ten. It's almost like same misery, different day. Leading up, the story was, can James Franklin and Penn State beat Ohio State in a big matchup? You know, with C.J. Stroud on the Texans, PSU had the better quarterback in Drew Aller, and he didn't even find the end zone until there were 30 seconds left in the game. You wrote about this. How damaging was that loss at the Horseshoe with another opportunity basically go up in smoke?
Yeah, I think it's Penn State is, when you look at them and you compare them to Ohio State and Michigan, it's just, it's tough to pick them beating those teams, because we don't really know what Penn State's identity is. Like, this season they haven't really shown that they can pass the ball downfield. They haven't shown it too much in other seasons either, but with Aller being such a young quarterback, there's not really much that we can say about him. He's growing, and his wide receivers didn't give him much help. But then also, going into the season, I think everybody thought that Penn State would have this explosive rushing attack, and they go out there and Nick Singleton and Catron Allen, they both only get 9 carries. And it's just, there's no, it doesn't feel like they have an identity on offense, because we know Ohio State, even though they're going to want to run the ball, they are a team that can pass the ball, and they're always going to have capable receivers. Michigan, even though they are good at passing the ball, they're definitely a team where you look at them, you know that you're going to have to stop the rushing attack. Penn State, it just feels like, okay, are they going to be able to beat this team? Like, we don't really know the path to how they're going to beat these teams. And so I don't think it really kills the players' confidence, but I think on the outside looking in, we're like, well, how is this team supposed to beat Michigan? Like, what's going to change? Because, you know, I mean, Michigan's defense, they may or not know what's coming. And Penn State's offense, they just haven't shown that they can do much of anything against a really good defense. So we'll see. I think it could be another season where they finish with 2 losses, which it's not a bad thing to finish your season with losses to Ohio State and Michigan, but eventually they're going to have to start beating these teams, because you can recruit as well as them. You have the fan support, you have the environment. The only thing that's missing is the wins. So
yeah, we'll see. Might have to rename it sort of Happy Valley.
Exactly.
The last thing I want to get to, Florida State, First of all, it was just strange to see a game with Duke in football as a big showdown. Yet the Blue Devils took a small lead into the fourth quarter, and then the Noles just two long TD marches, another touchdown after a stop on defense. They just wore them down. I know Miami looms, but they control their fate with maybe Carolina, Louisville, and the league title game. How do you like the path that kind of sits before Florida State?
Yeah, I love it for Florida State. I think the Miami game, we'll see. It's an in-state clash. Those games can get a little weird, and then they also have another one with Florida. I think the Florida game's the most dangerous game on the schedule with the way Graham Mertz has really turned it up, and that offense has just found a pulse, which I didn't expect after watching the season opener against Utah, so that's been a little bit surprising. But Florida State, I think they finished undefeated, and I think they're going to win the ACC and go into the college football playoff unbeaten. And the thing about Florida State is if anyone is, like, you know, casually getting into college football and they're, like, the entry level and you're looking at the transfer portal hole that Colorado had this year and the two ones that USC's had these last two seasons and you're wondering what the difference is, it's because Florida State has been able to build over time. Mike Norvell, he's been there for a couple seasons. They've recruited really well, and they've used the portal to strengthen a roster that was already going to be pretty good. And I think that's the difference, and that's why Florida State, it's so much more different than we've seen for these other transfer portal halls. And we've seen it last season with LSU, where they brought in a whole bunch of transfers, but I think LSU also kind of caught people off guard with how good they were because Jaden Daniels exceeded expectations by a mile. But Florida State, they are showing what the transfer portal, like the how it can benefit a championship roster rather than build a championship roster.
Folks, he's Raymond Lucas Jr., wired into the whole college football landscape. Link all his terrific work and coverage from his Twitter account. Use the handle at Raymond Lucas Jr., 24/7 Sports. Ray, great stuff. Awesome having you back. Enjoy all the action this weekend. And, of course, I look forward to catching up again down the road, talk some football, college basketball, all of it.
Definitely. I will be looking forward to it, and I can't wait to see how the season unfolds because I think we're in for something special.
All right. Hey, appreciate your time. Have a great weekend. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. There you go. Ray Lucas Jr.,